Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communication, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in and ask questions or make comments during the show. If you're in America, you can ring toll-free at 877-876-5227. Again, that is 877-876-5227. Otherwise, please ring direct area code 530-876-3222. Again, 530-876-3222. This week, I'm very pleased to bring on a friend who is a fellow facilitator for a near-death discussion support group. And he is out of Los Angeles, California, and he is the president of what they call LA IAMS. And he has also had an out-of-body experience, and he's quite a brilliant individual. Please welcome to this show, Dennis Purcell. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
Hello, Juliet. I can barely hear you.
Well, no one can ever hear me with my sweet little voice, so we'll just have to sing to the fairies tonight, and that's the best that we can do. Because it's just the story of my life. But anyway, we'll do the best that we can. And for anybody out there who feels very generous, if you would like to send me a gift of a megaphone, I would really appreciate that. And my address is on my website. So megaphones are welcome. Anyway, welcome to the show, Dennis. And anyway, do you...
thank you so much for allowing me to say what I have to say.
I've really been looking forward to this because I was quite delighted when I read about your out-of-body experience at, you were age 19, is that correct?
Yes, it was the spring of 1965, 10 years before Raymond Moody's book.
Oh, indeed, 10 years before anybody knew about near-death experiences anyway.
Yeah, but there had been some literature about out-of-body experience.
Yes, because that's something that has been known for a longer period of time. And so go ahead and tell us about that.
Okay, well, basically, it was the spring of 1965, and I was 19 years old. I came home from the local college up in Redding in Northern California, USA, and I was very tired. It was the middle of the afternoon, and I laid down on the bed and went to sleep. And at some point while I was asleep, I became aware that I was completely awake, but my body was asleep. And I collected my essence from my extremities and moved up my spine. And as I moved up my spine, I could kind of hear a sound that reminded me of a television program that we had in the United States back in the 1950s called Science Fiction Theater. And there were a couple of electrodes with a spark traversing the gap between them, and it was moving up the electrodes in the television program. And
sort of
as
like
it moved
a zapping
up,
sound, would you say?
Pardon me?
Sort of like a zapping sound?
No, it was a.
Okay, almost like a marathon. How do you call it? Marathon, however that is called. Very interesting sound.
Yeah, it was a sound increasing in frequency, and as it was increasing in frequency, my essence was moving up my spine, and when it got to my head, I had a kind of a vision of being on an escalator that was out of control and was shooting me up. And there was a lot of fear, and you know, and in the image that I had, I was trying to grab the handrails of the escalator. And it was going too fast, and I shot off the top of the escalator. As soon as I shot off the top, I shot to the top of my head. And when I shot to the top of my head, it was complete peace, total absence of fear, and just a tremendous feeling of well-being. So
at
that point...
And were you completely out of your body at that point?
Yeah, at that point I was out of my body.
Okay.
And my body was on the bed, and I was hovering by the body up and to the side of it. And I sensed somebody to my left and behind me. And I, the first thing I did was to say, you know, this apparently is the kind of experience somebody has who is dying, the experience of death that somebody has when there are no traumatic circumstances, because it was a relatively peaceful transition to the state. But in any case, somebody was off to the left side and behind me, and so I somehow I knew that this person was there to answer my questions, and sensed that he was my guide. And so I said, "What am I?" And he said, "You are a seat of consciousness. Seat, not seed. Seat." And I said, "What is my shape?" And he says, "Roughly spherical." And at that point, I said, "Well, listen, Spirit, if I'm a seat of consciousness and roughly spherical, and I obviously don't need glasses to see, and physically my eyes require glasses, I said, why can't I see in a full 360-degree panorama behind what would be my head?" And he said, "It takes about 2 weeks to become deconditioned to the customary modalities of perception."
Very good.
And I knew he was talking to me, because some people might be able to see behind in a full 360-degree panorama immediately. But in any case, I wasn't through asking questions. I then moved out of the bedroom and through the wall. And I was hovering out over the dichondra, which is a kind of grass.
Right.
Pardon me?
It looks like clovers or something, correct?
I don't remember what it looks like. I believe it's like clover, yeah.
All right.
And so I was hovering about 5 or 6 feet off the ground over the dichondra, and I then said, what is my method of propulsion? And he said, willpower. So I tested it. I willed myself to go 1 foot forward, and then I willed myself to come 1 foot back, and it worked. I said, well, that must be the case. So then I said, what is different about my experience of the world? You know, I'm feeling really good, and everything is bright and shiny, but why is it that, you know, what is different about my field of perception than if I were standing here physically? And he said, put your attention on the high tension wires across the gravel road in front of the house. And I did, and I could hear people cutting in and out of the power. And there was a frequency associated with that electrical current that went, And so I said, well, that's definitely different. And at that point, I looked off to the southeast, and I could all of a sudden remember all the experiences I'd had up till the age of 4. It was kind of like a life review, because I hadn't remembered those experiences as a 19-year-old.
And you said this was a life review until the age of 4, correct?
Until the age of 4.
Okay.
Because I had access to all the memories since the age of 4, but I didn't remember prior to being 4. So,
oh, okay.
What happened, and it was kind of simultaneous that I had all these experiences, but it was like just gaining access to all these memories. And when you suddenly gain access to a whole lot of memories, you have the experiences available to you simultaneously.
Exactly.
So then having remembered, you know, all these childhood memories, I suddenly saw a field of clouds off to the southeast. And there was a lady talking to me from these clouds, and she says, "And this is where you were before you were born." And I said, I don't remember what I said, but I remembered, I had a brief memory of being briefed by her about coming into this life, something about what to expect. But in any case, I then moved off to the southwest and traveled a little distance over the Dikandra, and I then probed my guide, and I noted that he had been a medical doctor in life, an MD, and that he was a young man, you know, appeared as a young man now, and I mean during that experience, but that he'd lived many years prior to that. So in any case, I asked my guide, I said, well, you know, maybe I'm supposed to go to heaven. And so I decided to go up, physically up in the air. So I went about 100 feet over my house, and I was looking down on the roof of the house, and my, you know, even though my shape was supposedly roughly spherical, I suddenly had a left leg. And I could feel it was cold up there. The wind was blowing, and I could feel the cold on my left leg. And I said, well, wait a minute, I don't like it up here. So I came back down, and I was again hovering over the Dikandra in the southwest corner of the property. And I said, well, what can I do? And my guide says, you can go anywhere, do anything. And I said, what tremendous freedom. So I decided I wanted to go to Mount Bali across the Sacramento Valley. And Redding is in the north end of the Sacramento Valley, and I was on east of Redding, and I could look across and see Mount Bali west of Redding. And I wanted to go there because I'd always wanted to climb Mount Bali. So I said, I want to go to Mount Bali, but excuse me?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. I'm really having trouble hearing you. I don't know if it's a bad connection or what, but in any case, then said, well, I don't want to get too far from my body because I know I'm going to return to my body. And so what's the solution, guide? So the guide says, you can project your analogous modalities of perception from your seat of consciousness while your physical body is in the bedroom. So you're actually in three places simultaneously. So I projected my analogous modality of hearing to Mount Bali. I don't know why I picked hearing, but I did. And I went up to the snow level, and I could hear the snow melting into a puddle in the springtime. And that, for some reason, satisfied me that I'd been to Mount Bali. So I then recollected my analogous modality of hearing with my seat of consciousness. And about that time, my father pulled up in his pickup. And he pulled up in the driveway. And I said, well, this is my chance to gather data. And the reason I wanted to gather data was because I was basically pretty much of a reductionist prior to this experience. And I knew that anybody I told it to would want some kind of evidence. So I decided to collect as much evidence as I could during the experience.
That's a very good idea, actually.
Well, in any case, my father pulls up in his pickup, and when he stopped the pickup, I measured the right front tire of the pickup in relation to the little sticks along the driveway, and it looked like it was about 6 inches behind the third stick. So I said, that's datum one. I'm going to check this out physically when I get back to my body. So in any case, he gets out of the truck, and immediately I knew I loved him very much. And the difficulties we'd been having had to do with me, not him. And they had to do with me because I was of the age that I was trying to launch my own life and get out of the house and go out into the world. And I was rebelling against the lot that he stood for. So I accepted responsibility for those difficulties in our relationship and knew that I loved him very much. And I remembered knowing him for 600 years. Don't ask me why 600, but for literally hundreds of years, I remembered knowing him in and out of the physical world in one form or another. I can't remember now the details of that, but I remember knowing him all that time and being very close to him. So anyway, so he comes around the truck, and while he was coming around the truck, I remembered an experience I had had before I was born. Apparently when I was in utero, and he was with the Allied troops advancing in Germany during the spring of 1945. And I guess it had snowed earlier or something, and there was runoff, and there was mud, and he was slogging through the mud. And I remember this being prior to my birth, and I was just excited and happy that he was going to be my father. So
you saw this during that experience?
Pardon me?
You saw that during your experience?
Yeah.
It's sort of like you went right into that memory when you saw him get out of the truck.
Yes.
Wow, that's really nice.
Yes. And so anyway, that scene disappeared, and he came around the truck, and he had always wanted us to call him by his first name. He wanted his children to call him by his first name. So I said, hi, Dale, and when I wanted to have a hand to wave with, I had a hand to wave with. So I waved at him, and of course he didn't see me. So he comes around the truck, and he goes and opens the door and goes into the living room and throws his hat on a little table. And so I came in either through the closed door behind him or through the door before he shut it. I don't remember. But in any case, I said, well, this is the second data point that I can observe here. The relationship of the bill of the hat to the corners of the table, the little table there. So I did that, and basically I mentally photographed the bill of the hat in relationship to the corners of the table. So he then went down the hall because he was very tired after work, and I used what I'd learned. I projected my analogous modality of vision down the hall to follow him while my seat of consciousness was in the living room and my body was in the bedroom. And I then watched him as he went into the master bedroom, and I watched his arms and legs as he lay down on the bed because I knew he was dead tired and he wasn't going to move. So I photographed that, and that was datum number three. So then I recollected my analogous modality of vision in my seat of consciousness in the living room, and I was just hovering there feeling really good. My mother was in the kitchen whistling, and of course my dad was zonked out in the bedroom. So I then was just feeling very good, and all of a sudden an aperture opened up in the wall, and it got larger and larger, and behind this aperture was a field of clouds, and on the field of clouds was a lady dressed in clothes from the 1930s or perhaps the 1940s. I remember she had a necklace on, and she had a dress from that period. And she had her legs crossed in a lotus posture. She was sitting on this cloud, and there was somebody off to my left and outside of the aperture that I could not see. So anyway, she was drifting towards me on this field of clouds through the aperture. So I started to go through the aperture to go talk to her. And as I did, she looked up at this teacher or somebody that was with her, and she said, "Oh, these beginners."
Very good.
So I said, well, that's my cue to go back to my body. So I went back to my body, and it was like being in a cold brick. I couldn't control my eyelids. I couldn't do anything. So
sort of like being paralyzed.
Yeah, it was
where
exactly like being paralyzed.
You couldn't move anything, including your eyelids, yes.
Yeah, many people report that.
Yes, indeed, myself included.
Yeah. But in any case, I asked my guide, I said, "What is the matter? Why can't I blink my eyelids? Or why can't I move my eyelids?" And he says, "It takes a little while to reconnect with the nerve endings." So I just took my time, and I reconnected with the nerve endings. And then I started to come into waking consciousness. And as I started to come into waking consciousness, I started to forget the whole experience. And I could still talk to my guide, so before I forgot, I said, what can I do? I want to remember this. This is extremely important. And he said, "Back up and copy your spiritual memories to your physical brain to make them accessible to waking consciousness." So I did that. And then I came into full waking consciousness. And I felt really good. I remembered every detail of the whole experience. And I immediately got up from the bed, walked out, looked in on my dad, datum number 3, and he was sprawled out just as I'd seen him. And I walked in the living room and looked at the hat, datum number 2, and it was exactly the way I mentally photographed it. I looked out of the front door at the truck, and the right front tire was 6 inches behind the third stake.
Wow.
So basically, that's the experience.
Did you ever talk to your mom and dad about that? Did you ever talk to them?
Yeah, I talked to them, and they just thought I was kind of eccentric.
Yeah.
They didn't really put me down or anything, but, you know, they just said, well, you know, things happen that people don't understand, and went from there.
Well, it's very interesting because there have been a number of experiences when people have gone out of body, and, of course, out of body during a near-death experience. And they've been able to report details, just like you did, of things that they could not have possibly seen from the vantage point of their physical bodies.
Right. And well, an experience like that is called a veridical experience, because you empirically verify it, or somebody else empirically verifies it, after the fact that, indeed, these events objects were present at the time that you went out of your body.
And it's also really interesting how the moment you were completely removed from your body, the fear dissipated, it was gone. And you felt total peace, and you had a profound sense of freedom. And that is something really significant to take note of, too. And when you were describing that, one of my many deathbeds that I've been on, back in China, I think it was in 1972, this is before coming to America, and I was in an intensive care ward, and I was dying, and strangely enough, I felt like I was being squeezed out of my body from the feet up, starting at the feet.
Mm.
Almost as if, you know, squeezing the contents out of a toothpaste tube.
Mm.
And then finally popping out of the head. And I think a lot of people go through that kind of experience, and you don't have to be on the verge of death, obviously, to have that kind of experience, but it was a bit frightening somehow. It was almost like I couldn't breathe, and you know, the physical body and anything associated with that is by default going to struggle to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But once the person lets go and is removed from the body, there is no more struggling, there's no more fear.
Yes. My experience was once I got out of the body, I was totally out of the body. There was absolutely no fear.
Exactly.
Even when the lady called me a beginner.
Well, I'd have to say that you were doing a very good job as a beginner. And at least you had the beginning, you know, and a very powerful one, because you did collect quite a bit of data there. And there was a lot of things that were made very clear to you. Also, the fact that our consciousness does indeed exist outside of the physical brain, and the physical body is not really our identity and who we are. So,
yes.
You know, these experiences are very important, and I love talking with people who have had OBEs as well as fellow near-death experiences, because, again, I want to encourage everybody, you don't have to be on the verge of death to have such spiritually transformative experiences. And you could just be sitting at your desk and, or sitting at the piano or being doing something out in the garden, and suddenly you are in an altered state of awareness where you're so at peace and you feel that being enveloped in unconditional love, and it's so wonderful. And I think that as more people come to understand the dynamics involved with these experiences and that they are indeed valid, I don't know, I'm somehow feeling that there's going to be a lot more of this spontaneous out-of-body and spiritually transformative experiences. Now, you've since then obviously gotten into some very significant vocations centered around near-death experiences. You joined the International Association for Near-Death Studies. You are the president.
Julian?
Yes.
I can barely hear you. I think it may be my fan. Let me turn my fan down.
Okay.
Just be a couple seconds.
This sort of thing is very important for our listeners to understand, is that the out-of-body experience is just...
Okay.
Okay, in there. I was just explaining to everyone that the out-of-body experience is just as compelling and significant as a near-death experience, but anyway, with you, I was saying that you are the president of the Los Angeles IAMS.
Yes, I'm president after Reuben Beckham, who was our previous president, moved to El Paso. He had three near-death experiences, one of which came after a suicide attempt.
Wow.
So he's had some of the most remarkable experiences I've ever heard.
Well, maybe we'll have to have him on our show at some point, too. That would be very interesting to talk to somebody who's, you know, attempted suicide, and that is a very important topic that we have. But you're also a thanatologist, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. What got you into all of this? Was it as a result of your OBE or other ensuing experiences that you
actually
had?
It was a little bit before the NDE. You know, as I said, I was kind of a reductionist,
mm-hmm.
kind of a traditional scientistic thinker prior to my experience. I embraced the metaphysics of traditional science, you know, the belief that the world is essentially based on something objective, you know, what Immanuel Kant, the German philosopher, called the Ding an sich. That is some substratum of physical matter that is basic to the universe. So I couldn't understand. I did believe in God, but I couldn't understand how God could exist without having a physical basis.
A lot of people are like that. Dear me.
So when I was at the University of California at Berkeley as a freshman in 1963, I got into the stacks in the library, and I found the book. I found the two books by your countryman Frederick William Henry Myers of the British Society for Psychical Research.
Yes.
And he wrote in the 19th century. He wrote Phantasms of the Living, and he wrote another book called The Human Personality and Survival of Bodily Death. And those books introduced me to the tremendous amount of evidence that was available even then for survival and for the independence of consciousness from the physical brain. So that began to change my views. But the basic change occurred when I had the out-of-body experience, because after that, I didn't believe that the physical universe was at the basis of reality anymore. I did a 180-degree ontological shift to believing in consciousness as being the fundamental reality, with the whole physical universe being an epiphenomenon, being derivative of consciousness. So that consciousness is fundamental.
Yes. Because indeed, I've always been the opposite. I always felt, ever since I've been small, I always felt that the physical plane was basically an illusion, that it wasn't very real. But I've always been consciously multidimensional. Of course, I've paid the price for that, people thinking I'm a nutter and, you know, thinking that I needed some kind of psychiatric help and all of that nonsense. And that's what is so good about this work that we are doing, that we are able to actually prove otherwise.
The quantum physicist Amit Goswami up at the University of Oregon has professed this metaphysics, that consciousness is the ground of being, and the physical universe derives from consciousness. And he says it's consistent with quantum physics. And that was my experience of my out-of-body experience indicated that consciousness was more basic than the physical world.
Now, would you say that you have had after effects as a result of your OBE?
Just a complete change of worldview,
mm-hmm.
plus an opening up to near-death experiences and similar experiences. I've learned a great deal from near-death experiences.
Have you had other experiences that you can recall, or was that really the only one?
That was the primary one. That was the only really clear one.
Okay.
I've had dreamlike experiences, or lucid dreamlike experiences, but those didn't even begin to compare with the original experience.
Still, those are very valid and worth noting, very significant indeed, because there is something very unique about having a lucid dream, and people can even often control the contents of those dreams.
Yeah, the difference is there was an out-of-body projector in the early 20th century named Oliver Fox, and again, one of your countrymen. And he noted that he could move from a lucid dream to an out-of-body experience. And I forget the name of the title of his book, but I believe it was published in 1906. But in any case, he found that when he was in a lucid dream, he could consciously will himself to leave his body. So it's like there are stages. There's ordinary sleep and dreaming, and then there's a kind of waking up during that dreaming process into a lucid dream. And then after that, there's the out-of-body projection. And then if you talk about continuity, after that is the whole transcendental realm of a classical near-death experience.
When did you start really getting into the study of all of this and thanatology and all of that?
Well, thanatology relatively recently.
Okay.
I've been reading about parapsychology ever since 1963. And then I've been a member of IAN since it formed in 1981 or whenever.
Whoa, one of the original members. Good for you.
But never, contributing anything, just really being vicariously, listening to people's experiences. But as time went on, I got more interested directly in the dying process. And I talked to Ruben, who after his third near-death experience, this is Ruben Beckham, our previous president, and he suggested that I take a thanatology program to get a certificate at World University in Ojai. And
in California?
Pardon me?
That's in California, correct?
Yeah, that's Ojai, California.
Okay.
And it's www.worlduniversity.com or .org. If you have any trouble, you can go to Google it as World University Ojai. But in any case, I took their program and got a certificate, and I've been working as a hospice volunteer now for 3 years. And I sit with dying patients, and I find it is extremely rewarding.
Oh, indeed. Now, I'm really curious about the content of the material that you learnt at that university and the source of it, because, for example, I wrote an article, which I have mentioned before on the air, called The Dying Process from an Experiencer's Perspective. And what prompted that is that I was visiting a hospice, and a pamphlet was given to me that was written by a registered nurse describing the dying process. And I thought, well, that's well and good, but there was a lot that was missing, because to my understanding, this person had never been through a near-death experience of being on the threshold of death. It was just something through medical studies and what have you. So the article that I wrote, I just felt it was very important for me to write it because of the fact that I have been through the dying process, which is very different from just observing a dying person. You can't really get inside that person's consciousness or experience, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Unless you've actually been there.
Even going through the initial phases in a vertical out-of-body experience,
mm-hmm.
I can understand what the dying process would be for somebody who wasn't going through traumatic circumstances at the time.
Right. And that will indeed give you a lot of insight, for sure, because when you're having an OBE, you're already becoming consciously multidimensional.
Yeah. So, we studied, for instance, the nearing-death awareness of two authors. One of them is Maggie Callahan, and I can't remember the other author. And I think it's called, I don't remember the title of the book either, but there are a couple of books, Deathbed Visions and At the Hour of Death by Carlos Osis, who is a psychical researcher. And those describe nearing death awareness as well. And What happens is that people throughout the world, regardless of their culture, go through stages of perception of the approaching, the other side that's approaching them, or they're approaching the other side, in the last part of their dying process.
Exactly.
And they see dead relatives, and sometimes anticipate getting on a plane or a train or some means of conveyance to get them to what sounds like a foreign country. And they're wondering if their papers are in order.
Oh, I've got the attitude, never mind passports. You don't need them on other dimensions. But it's very interesting because I refer to that period as the twilight stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, one is toggling between the different dimensions. And yet there's a cohesiveness to their thinking. And PMH Atwater has spoken about this, and other people, especially people who have dealt with hospice patients, they can, you know, very clearly communicate with people they're seeing on the other side and then clearly communicate to you and then, you know, turn back to them and communicate with them, all in a very coherent manner, which is not possible when someone is merely hallucinating.
Yes. There's a case that we studied, Daisy Dryden, in about 1858 up in Northern California. And she, for about 3 or 4 days, was alive but totally aware of the other side. And she was able to communicate with people there and people here and, you know, and pass the conversation back and forth.
Yes. I've done that myself, I've got to say. And if anybody wants to read about my near-death experience and some of these comments, you can find that at towardthelight.org. And another very good website, too, with a whole bunch of near-death experiences and other testimonies is near-death.com, near-death.com with a dash in between the words near and death.
I wanted to mention that if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can go to the National IANS website, IANS.org, and go through the support groups to the Los Angeles, California support group, and click on it, and you can get my contact information.
Actually, I just did that a few minutes ago, and I didn't see anything about your contact information. So they're going to have to.
Well, it has my email address. On contact, on the contact line, it has my email address.
Okay, which is LAIANS, LAIANDS
at
AOL.com. Okay, but you don't, or do you have a near, sorry, do you have a website?
No, unfortunately I don't.
Okay, I didn't think so, but I had just looked before we went on the air for your information on the IANS website, and I didn't see anything, so.
No, it's LAIANDS at AOL.com. That's my email address.
Okay, well, I would certainly encourage people to contact you, and also, when do you have your meeting? I know I call it my meeting, FOI, which stands for the Friends of IANS, Nashville, but people call it IANS or FOI, either one. They're basically the same thing. When do you have your meeting?
Okay. At LAIANS, which is what we call it, we have our meeting on the fourth Saturday of each month on the on the fourth Saturday at between 1 and 4 p.m. And I also help facilitate Orange County IANS, which is about 50 miles away. We have our meeting there on the second Saturday of each month between 1 and 4.
And do you want to give a location?
Do I want to give a what?
The location of the meeting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. LAIANS is at 5521 Grosvenor, Grosvenor Boulevard, Los Angeles, California 90066. And Orange County IONS is at 14402 Prospect Avenue, Tustin, California. And I don't know the zip, but that's not a problem.
The zip code, okay. Yeah, well, that's very good because I know there are a lot of people in California. That place is big enough to be a country, actually. I think people would really enjoy knowing about the meetings. And, of course, if anyone has got any questions about that, you can always go to IANDS.org and, again, look under support groups. Click on that and then click on local groups, and you can find the groups under United States and then under California. And they are all over the world. And I am on the Global Friends of IONS committee, and we're trying to encourage people all over the world, it doesn't matter where you are, if you are interested in starting such a support group, please feel free. You can contact me or you can contact IONS directly, and we'll certainly be more than pleased to assist you in starting a group. And there are basically two different types of groups. One that is where people bring speakers in to give presentations, and then another type of group is where people just sit down and have a discussion, sharing kind of discussions with one another. So it is really, really nice, and people can feel very safe and comfortable. And roughly how many people typically show up to your meetings, Dennis?
Well, there are probably 450,000 experiencers in Los Angeles County based on the Gallup poll that there were 5%
wow.
of the population as experiencers. But we unfortunately, we only have maybe 25, 30 people at a meeting. And the same is true of Orange County, or very similar statistics. But, you know, we're advertising in one of the local newspapers now, so maybe we'll get some more people.
And what was that number again? How many?
450,000, because there are 9 million people in Los Angeles County. 5% of them are experiencers.
Wow.
Based on the Gallup poll, so 450,000.
That's a very, very interesting statistic to learn there. And the near-death experience has been happening ever since humanity has existed, but it's only more recently become really openly talked about and you know brought into the open in the media, people having meetings about it. In fact, I was very much a latecomer when it came to joining IONS. I didn't even find out about IONS until 1997. So I'm still a babe in this, and I didn't even have my coming out as far as being an NDEer to the public until 2002. So it took a lot of nerve for me to come forward, and here I'm doing the show now, so I'm broadcasting to the whole world, and I'm not ashamed of it in the least that I've had a number of near-death and many out-of-body experiences. And the wonderful scientific proof that is surfacing now to validate these experiences as absolutely real and consistent. And I'm so grateful for having people like you, Dennis, with us and sharing your experiences, because everyone who does share an experience can add more weight to the validity of these experiences and the fact that the love and the peace are prevailing emotions, experiences, states of being.
Well, I'm very grateful to you, Juliet, for giving me an opportunity to express this experience. I'd also like to say that I'm working on an article about the objective correlate, an objective correlate of consciousness, which proposes that there's an energy envelope about consciousness during its exteriorization in the local environment.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dennis, and it is time to sign off for this transmission of Toward the Light, but it's been wonderful as always, and we look forward to speaking with someone, all of you, next week, and please do visit my website, towardthelight.org, once again. Blessings to everyone. We'll talk to you next week, and please do remember that only love prevails. Blessings and light to all.